Thanks very much. I'm not surprised George is late because the star always arrives a few minutes late. He kind of builds up the anticipation, so we're quite used to it in our business, so don't worry about that. It's very strange to come to Manchester and not to be able to meet my old friend Jim Allen, who was a writer I worked with for many years and lived in Middleton, and I think was the finest writer of his generation, certainly the finest socialist writer of his generation. Jim wrote many good lines. Lines like, Churchill compared to Lenin was like a vulture to an eagle. And he said, speaking, he had a great way with describing bent Labour MPs and bent trade union officials. And there was a scene I remember where there was a film about a strike. Most of his films are about strikes, but he did a film about a strike, and there was a trade union official who was obviously going to sell out the strike. And the one character said, never mind, they said, he's the best one we've got. And another character, rather more wisely, said, no, no, he's the best one they've got. Meaning, of course, to quote another famous figure from the left, the bourgeoisie cannot rule alone. Which brings us to the Labour Party. There's all political discussion now is under the shadow of this appalling, atrocious war that's been visited upon us and which we find is being waged in our name. And it's a moment when a beam of light has shone on all the political protagonists and one can see exactly where they stand. I mean, often, you know, the political life continues and we may get misled by their rhetoric. But the war, like the Spanish Civil War, has shone a beam of light and you can see exactly where these people stand. The Labour right, New Labour, stands for American corporate power. That's where they stand. Liberal Democrats, anybody think you support the Liberal Democrats, they think it's the war is legal one day and then it's fine the next. And the Labour left, so many of the Labour left that we're kind of familiar with for decades, who talk a good fight, but then when the chips are down, suddenly they're busy, suddenly they've been talked into it, suddenly there are bigger interests that they have to support. And these, I think, are the people we have most contempt for of war. And then there are the great majority of people who are just appalled by this stunning crime that has been said that has been done in our name. And I'd really like to make four fairly simple points. The first point is that this is the worst Labour leadership in the history of the Labour Party. Broken international law, they've broken the United Nations, they've broken the Geneva Convention by refusing and pretending that they cannot protect civilians and the cultural heritage of that country, which is a clear breach of the Geneva Convention. Even Harold Wilson kept us out of Vietnam. Even Ramsay MacDonald, when he became a Tory, left the party and joined the Tories in the coalition. But Blair sits there, and that's why I say it is the worst, the most unprincipled Labour leadership in the history of the Labour Party. I think we can say, and I choose these words carefully, they are liars and they are hypocrites. The weapons of mass destruction, which of course have not yet been found, and if there was any time, if they were this threat that they're claimed, and this point has been made many times, but it's so crucial. If they were a danger, of course they must have been used now. Saddam Hussein could not be in a worse state. He could be in a worse position. Hounded throughout his country, God knows where. He could not be in a worse position. If he couldn't use his weapons of mass destruction, then he could never, ever use them. So they could not be that threat that they talk about. And secondly, and I think this is something that is worth being quite precise about, the West, and particularly the US, supported Saddam Hussein after Halabja.
Yeah.
After the gassing of the Kurds, there were very precise events which we can document where that support was given. And I've jotted a few down. And I think it's because we say this, and we're not able to actually produce the evidence. So, like, here's some really tight evidence. First of all, after Halabja, after the gassing of the Kurds, George Bush Sr. signed a national security decision and said this: normal relations between the US and Iraq would serve our long-term interests. Secondly, the US giant corporation Bechtel won a contract to build a petrochemical plant which could generate chemical weapons, and that was after Halabja, after the gassing of the Kurds. In 1989, Bush, the old man Bush, approved $1 billion in loan guarantees to Iraq. $1 billion to the guy that they said is part of this axis of evil, they guaranteed $1 billion to. And then at the same time, in 1990, $500 million in advanced technology sales to Iraq. Now, this is all after the gassing of the Kurds. This is after we saw Donald Rumsfeld shaking his hands. So there is absolutely clear evidence that they were fully supportive of him right up to the invasion of Kuwait. So that was the first point I wanted to make. The second point is this, that why was the war fought? I think it was fought, and I think this is becoming clear. The war was fought for the US to redesign Iraq's economy in the interests of US capital. To redesign the whole economy. Naomi Klein wrote a very good piece, and I wanted to quote one line from it. The economy will be fully privatized, foreign-owned, and open for business. That is, the war was fought for markets, it was fought for cheap labor, it was fought for raw material, the most important of which, of course, is the oil. And again, you know, people say, well, you people on the left, you know, you're always making these grand statements, you're always making these allegations. Okay. So now here's some very precise proof out of their own mouths. And it's, I guess many, many, many people here will have heard of the Project for the New American Century. Now this fulfilled the function of the Ridley Report from Margaret Thatcher. Now those with long memories will know that before Thatcher came to power, there was a guy, Nicholas Ridley, who set out the agenda for the Thatcher Project. He said, you want laws to clamp down on trade unions, you want to let unemployment rise to discipline workers, and you want a series of set-piece strikes which the government will win. And he laid out who the unions were going to be. You don't take on the miners first. You don't take on somebody who can rip your throat out. You take on the weakest one first. Who was that? The steel workers, and so on. And he laid out the whole strategy. Project for the New American Century, which is a pressure group led by people like Cheney, like Rumsfeld, like Jeb Bush, who fixed election for his brother, Paul Wolfowitz, and others. Their project and the documents associated with it set out what the US, the strategy they wanted to sustain in the Middle East. So I wanted just to quote two or three sentences from the various documents. For example, the Statement of Principles in 1997, their aim was to shape a new century favorable to American principles and interests. And this requires a military that is strong and ready to meet both present and future challenges, a foreign policy that boldly and purposefully promotes American principles abroad. And then, so that's, you know, that's what they're going for. They're going for double top, really. And then, in 1998, they said this: the removal of Saddam Hussein regime from power means this will safeguard the safety of American troops in the region, of our friends and allies like Israel and the moderate Arab states, and this is important, a significant portion of the world's supply of oil. So that's what they were after in 1998, safeguarding the supply of oil and safeguarding Israel. And then last year, And again, so this isn't the left saying it about the oil. This is them themselves. This is they themselves are saying it about oil. Last year, a report which was leaked, or somebody got hold of, and this is really crucial. It says, well, the unresolved conflict with Iraq provides the immediate justification. The need for substantial American force in the Gulf transcends the issue of Saddam Hussein. In other words, we'll use Saddam as an excuse, but we're going to go in there anyway. And the wider aim, the wider strategic aim, is the maintaining of global US preeminence. In other words, they're going to go in there, they've decided this, they're going to go in there under the pretext of Saddam Hussein, get their troops in there so they can stay in the dominant position they are. And another leak, which, just to finish the quote on this, which, and this is really nice for us, actually, it says the US should, and this is their exact words, mind, I'm not making this up, discourage advanced industrial nations, that's, you know, us and France and Germany, discourage advanced industrial nations from challenging our leadership or even aspiring to a larger regional or global role. So that's it. And when Blair talks about being a partner with the US, they don't want partners, they want subjects. And they want bag carriers, they want a fig leaf, they want a facade of respectability. Now, I mean, I ask myself, does Blair not know this when he's saying it's about oil? Does he not know this when he says it's about disarming them? Or is he consciously putting up a kind of facade, like the Ronald Reagan School of Sincere Acting folks? It's the same kind of way of being disarming in front of the camera. But it's an absolute charade. And I have very little patience for those that say, well, Blair, it just proves Blair wasn't dependent on the focus groups. Yeah. What a man of principle. He faced the party, faced them down. Not at all. He knew exactly what they were after. Sorry we started without you, George. And I thought I would do so well. Okay.
Hello!
Next story, today are we? Next story!
Okay.
Just one more bit on the... On Tony Blair, it is compulsive stuff, really. This is one of his best bits. This was a bit, I really like this one. He said, this was February 3rd. He said, this is, again, straight quotes, this is about weapons of mass destruction, and this is the best, and that any issues to do with contracts and so on will be for the Iraqi people. Okay. Fast forward, cut to last week. The US Agency for International Development have invited multinationals to bid for everything. Road rebuilding to new textbooks. And already the US company Stevedoring Services of America have been given a contract to manage the port of Umm Qasr. $3 million. Now, when he says it's for the contract for the Iraqi people, he knows he's lying. He knows he's lying, and that's why he's not fit to lead. He's not fit to lead our country. Not fit to lead. Our country. That was the second point. The third, they get shorter. The third point is this: the corporate interests that drove the war are the same corporate interests that we fight at home. The corporate interests that are attacking our public services, that make it impossible for us to pay firefighters a decent wage, amongst many other public servants. These are these are the people who are behind the drive to PFI, behind the drive to PPP, the foundation hospitals, who prevent us from reclaiming our transport system, an integrated transport system. And by the way, Jarboats, it's a year's anniversary to the day tomorrow of the Potter's Bar rail crash. An absolute monument to the disaster of rail privatisation. And the irony that Jarvis, one of these subcontractors, is now being given contracts for schools is a monstrosity. That you think, hang on, is this the Labour Party? This is not even the Labour Party of Michael Foot. Yeah. And he has some things to answer for. So, part of the fight, it is one fight, it is one struggle against the war, against the occupation, is the same struggle to defend our public services, to end contracting out. And if there's any doubt about where the Labour Party is headed, we should remember the conversation, the reported conversation between Gordon Brown and a guy called John Monks. Now, people won't remember who John Monks is, but John Monks was, apparently he was the leader of the organised working class in this country. John Monks was the leader of the TUC. And he said to Gordon Brown before the last election, everything is up for, this was reported in the Guardian, it must be true, everything is up for grabs, everything is up for grabs apart from police, everything in education, in health, in all our public services is to be sold to corporations. Because they've cleaned out the manufacturing industry, all that's gone, the coal, the steel, all that has gone, the railways are gone, now it's down to the public services, and we're seeing it bit by bit through the health service, through the schools, and so on. And that is, it seems to me that it is the same fight. The fight to end the occupation is the same fight to defend our public services.
Yeah, yeah.
Fourth and final point I'd like to make is not a point, it's a question. And that is that this is an extraordinary moment. It's an extraordinary moment because we've seen the death of social democracy. We've seen the death of that movement which the Labour Party embodied, which was a mixed economy, which was a balance, so they said, between the private and the public, where they could run private industry, could be harnessed in such a way that the benefits spilled out to the whole to the community. We've seen an end of that. And we've seen an end of the whole Labour Party Social Democrat project, to my mind. We've also seen the alternative, the new Labour alternative, which is unquestioning commitment to the hardest line demands of American capital. That's their alternative. The Tories, of course, occupy the same space. The Liberal Democrats are somewhere in the same puddle. There's a massive space for us. And the question is, can we occupy that space? And it's a huge challenge. And it seems to me that the Stop the War Coalition is a very unique movement, because it includes people who have a sense of what that opposition is. It includes Greens, it includes CND, it includes some of the few very honourable Labour left MPs, and I'm very pleased on the same platform as George, because he's the outstanding example, but there are one or two others, like Jeremy Corbyn, and we know. And so it's a huge challenge for us. And it seems, as I said, the Stop the War Coalition is in a prime position to do something about it, because we have these other elements. It isn't just like a sectarian left group. And there are organisations, there are branches that have arisen of people who are not, you know, who are not the old usual suspects that we've been selling papers to each other for years. There's a lot of people who've come in. Now, it seems to me, and I speak only for myself, it seems to me that is the basis on which we can build a left alternative. But we have to do it on the basis of the politics of the war. We can't do it by simply opposing war, by being kind of pacifist, by wanting goodwill amongst to all men. It's more complex than that. The people who fought the war have put the politics at the centre of it. When Rumsfeld and co. dish out their contracts, they show us what the war is about. Now we have to take that politics on board and say we not only oppose the occupation, we oppose corporate power, we defend our public services, and we stand for a socialist alternative based on common ownership, based on democracy in the workplace, where the wealth that we have created, that the people here have created, can be used by all of us for our mutual benefit. And that's the platform I think the Stop the War Coalition has got to move to. Now, if people drift away from that, then in the end, so be it. Because the Stop the War Coalition, in the end, will fragment. Because it's a single issue. You can't stop a war that's stopped. And the fighting has stopped. I mean, terrible things are continuing. But the actual war has stopped. We can't ever stop the war coalition when the war isn't happening. But we have to move on. We have to develop. And to me, that they have thrown down the agenda. They've said it's about the power of American capital. And we have to take our stand on another vision, on another alternative, on a socialist alternative. Because I think that is the way we can come in. We can no longer be a sectarian group, a fringe group on the left that people disparage and dismiss. We have the possibility to be centre stage. We have the possibility to be in the majority. And that's the opportunity that we have to take. And we become a coalition that stands on a socialist programme. I think that's the future.